All right, guys, welcome back to the Wave Miniconf. We've just made some minor changes to the schedule for this next session so that we've filled up our TBA slot. And it's going to appear on the screen any minute now. Anyway, Pamela's going to talk for about 15 minutes about APIs, right?
Anyway, so I'll talk for 15 minutes to give an overview of the APIs, and then that's to lead into James talking about a clone robot he made, and then I'm going to talk about what makes an extension really wavy. Then we have an afternoon tea and crumpets, and then Sam's going to give a talk after the break.
Yep. Please welcome Pamela to the stage.
I think we wanted to start off just with another video. That was kind of a cool video. How many of you guys have seen this video? Turn the volume down first. Okay. Is it going to be super? There's going to be so many fights at this conference. Okay.
What's all the fuss about Google Wave? If you're like me, you've used email for close to 15 years. And you may have noticed that sometimes it breaks down. Like, take this experience, for example. Say you email your web guy and say, hey, can you get that new website functionality A, B, and C up and running? And then your web guy replies, oh yeah, bro, no worries, I got A, B, and C under control. And so you CC your boss so you could watch what's going on, and then you reply, oh yeah, and here's that list of bugs that we found. And then he's like, oh yeah, yeah, no problem. Here's that password to that thing that you can check out when you have time. And you're like, sweet, and here's that attachment. And then you realize that you should forward this whole thing to your video guy so he can catch up on what's going on. He gets this mess of an email that would take a programmer to encode, and he doesn't reply all, so it creates another version of this thing. And everyone keeps posting and highlighting their answers to certain questions in the replies. The whole thing just starts mutating into this monster thing. Did you know email was invented 40 years ago, the same year as the lava lamp? So Google set out to rethink email. They took all the best features of these new communication innovations and they asked, what would email look like if it was made today? Instead of emails being passed along, Google Wave is a hosted conversation with only one copy that anyone can contribute to. So I can write A, B, and C functionality that I want to see happen in this website, and then I can invite my web guy to the Wave, and I can invite my boss too. And if we're online at the same time, I could actually see his replies in real time. He can drag and drop attachments, and then later you can invite the video guy, and he can replay the whole conversation with the playback tool to catch up. It's all really slick and convenient and not at all a monster. And that's like 3.5% of what Google Wave can do, from what I understand. You know, just kick it, grab a margarita, and watch your communication-ness soar. If I can only get an invite, that'd be great. So come on, Google. Give me an invite.
So that was back when we weren't giving that many invites out. So people did weird stuff to get invites. We had another person who tweeted a song that he wrote for one of our engineers, and was him playing a song on his guitar asking for an invite. That was cool. Now, unfortunately, we've given out most invites and most people wanted it, so we can't get people to do crazy shit anymore. So can we go back to like a really restricted product again? Because that'd be better for my public. All right, so, all right, cool. Let me go back to the game. All right, cool. So basically, I'm going to give an overview of the APIs, but in order to give you an overview of the APIs, I want to explain actually the Wave data model, because the APIs are basically interacting with that Wave data model and changing it, and that's how those APIs work. And we haven't really talked too much about the Wave data model yet today, right? So you've got the Wave protocol and the OT that says how stuff gets merged together, but then you've got the particular Wave data model that Google Wave has defined for the purpose of conversations. Now, other people could define their own data models. If you wanted to do like audio collaboration, you'd find a data model that, you know, describes an audio file, and that's what you actually have those OT operations performing on. But for the purpose of most Wave servers, they should all be sharing the same data model if they want to actually interact with each other. So I'm going to explain that first. So basically, you know, this is what the Wave client looks like. It looks like a lot of pretty, you know, DHTML, rounded corners, really fancy. But underneath it all, it's really got this pretty basic structure to it. So a Wave is, in fact, one or more wavelets. All right, and a wavelet is basically defined as being shared with a certain set of participants. So what you can do is you have your main wavelet here, which you've got all those participants on, and then if you do a private reply, you're actually creating a new wavelet with a new set of participants, and that new wavelet can contain, you know, any number of blips. Each wavelet, each wave can have its own set of tags. I actually think that's on the wavelet level, but it looks like it's on the wave level. And then we go down into the actual wavelet. So the wavelet has the participants, it has a title, it has a root blip, and it has any number of child blips, all right? So that's basically what a wavelet looks like. Now, for the XML, this is what we call the conversation model, which is part of the data model, and this describes what a particular wavelet conversation looks like. So in fact, all it is a set of blip IDs and how they're related to each other. And this is really cool because this is what's going to enable us to do blip surgery in the future, which means that if you're in a conversation and there's a part of the conversation that really belongs like somewhere else, you can actually go and select some blips and go move it somewhere else where it belongs. And this is one of the things that, you know, actually makes Wave really powerful, but we haven't exposed yet, you know, in the UI or the API. But potentially, since the conversation model is just a bunch of blips tied together in some ways, you just have to modify that conversation model, and now your conversation has a new structure to it. All right, so then we've got the blip, and a blip is basically a combination of text, elements, and annotations. So the elements can be stuff like images, gadgets, installers, form elements, and the annotations are stuff like, we've got the style annotations, if you want to specify that a range is bold. We've got link annotations to specify that a link is a certain range links to a particular site. So every annotation is a key value, and there's some annotations that the Wave client natively understands and says, all right, I see that annotation, I'm going to go and render that bit of text this way. So that's actually how everything gets styled. And it's nice because, you know, whenever you separate your text, your actual content from your styling, you tend to end up with a cleaner model, and it makes it easier to merge what people are doing. So this is what it actually looks like. If you look at a blip document, you'll see a doc, and then you'll see a bunch of lines, and you'll see a text on each line. So when you have a bullet isn't like in HTML where you've got like a UL and an LI and blah, blah, blah. A bullet would simply say line, I think, indent equals one, something like that. That would say this line is indented one. It's got bullets in Wave have no parents or anything like that because it'd be too difficult to actually figure out when two people were putting bullets in how to merge the parents together. So it's actually a lot simpler to do bullets this way. And then we've got the annotations. So here's the annotations for a particular document. It's got stuff like link/manual, which points to a GTUG, a Google site. We've got style/color. And I'll show this in an actual browser so you can see how to get to it yourself. So let's look at this one. All right. So when you're in Wave Sandbox, which is the development debugging Wave server, which is independent from the, it's actually running a different code base than Wave Preview some of the time, you'll get a few pieces of debug functionality. So one of them is editor debug. So when you click on this little arrow, you get editor debug at the bottom. And it's kind of like view source for Wave, right? So what you can do, you can look at the XML. So this shows you the lines. It shows you a gadget is right here. It shows you puts in some of the styling stuff there as well. And you can also look at the annotations. So if we look at annotations, we can see style, font, weight, bold, style, font, weight, bold, etc. So then you can visualize how these two things combine to form what you're seeing there. You can also go debug and then show all wavelets. And that'll show you all the wavelets associated with the current wave. So we've got the main wavelet. We've got the conversation wavelet, which right now just has two blips in it, pretty basic. And then there's a couple wavelets that aren't visible. So that's the cool thing about Wave, is that we actually store all of our data in Wave, right? So instead of having another database, you can just store your data on that particular wave and scope it to that, or you can create a new wave to store the data and pull it out of that wave. So I've started to do that for most of my robots. Like the LTA conference robot, all of those session waves actually have a little data document attached that refers to this URL of the session for that. And then the robot can take a look at that. All right, so there we go. So basically, that's what Wave is. It's a bunch of waves with wavelets, with blips, with annotations, with text, with elements. All of that combined. So that's important because when you're building gadgets or robots, that's what you're actually manipulating. So let's go to the extensions. My computer. It's so sad right now. And yeah, this is Flash, but it's nicer than PowerPoint. Okay, so robots, right? Robots are pretty cool because basically you can stick a robot in a wave and it can do crazy shit to your wave, right? It's a great way of pulling in other stuff into your wave, like pulling in a dictionary service, a code compilation service, something that turns all your text into images. It's a good way of ensuring that a wave maybe has a certain amount of characters in it, right? If you want a word counting robot. There's a lot of different things you can do with a robot. Just being, like, imagine being able to customize all your communication so that a certain code was run on that communication every time the communication was updated. It's actually pretty powerful stuff, so I'm excited about using it for lots of stuff. So robots are basically event listeners, all right? So at least right now, a robot sits on the wave, it listens for events, it gets information about the event, and then it says, all right, I see that event, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and here I'm going to send my operations back to the wave plant. All right. So, for example, we have this robot here. It's actually, I can show you this wave live. This one, my travel plan. Okay. So the robot shown there is called Geobot, and what it actually does is it analyzes the wave for mentions of addresses using the Yahoo Placemaker API. It then geocodes them, gets the latitude, longitude, and makes a link to Google Maps. So once you add this robot to your wave, it'll auto-locate all those addresses, and then if I click these, I can go off to Google Maps and take a look. So that's what that one's doing. All right, so what we basically have is, what's happening is that we're getting all this information in the form of JSON RPC. So a message in a little JSON bundle is sent to our app on App Engine. We then, you know, interpret that JSON, and we compose a new JSON back that contains the operations. So here, this is the events JSON. So it says, okay, we've got the wavelet self-added event, and here are the participants that were added. We have that our robot was added. So when I get that information, I decide that my robot should react to the self-added event. So what I do is say, oh, and then, sorry, this is the blips information. So you get information about the event and then information about the context of the event. So the context was the blip that it was added to, right, or the wave it was added to. So you get the information about the text, the contributors, etc. And then we have the operation that we set back. So in this case, all we're doing is annotating. We're just setting an annotation from, you know, range X to Y that says this is a link and it points to Google Maps. So here, our annotation operation, it's type document annotation set, and start 106, end 111, and the value goes to Google Maps. I should notice that this is This is using our old robots wire protocol. We've actually cleaned it up a bit, and we're working on releasing an API that uses a much cleaner looking wire protocol. So if this looks a little bit messy to you because it has stuff like Java class in the JSON, that will be fixed. And so the thing is that obviously you guys probably don't want to be sitting there composing JSON messages and figuring out what's wrong with your JSON. It's almost worse than composing XML messages and figuring out what's wrong with your XML. So we have client libraries in the two languages that App Engine is offered in, Python and Java. And people have written stuff like the Groovy and Rails and all that style for the JVM stuff. But basically, the client libraries let you do this in a programmatic way. So here we can register the event handlers. We're going to listen to the self-added event and the blip submitted event. And then when we hear that, we're going to go look it up in the Yahoo API, form a range based on the text that we matched on, and set the annotation. So that's going to receive the JSON, send it back. That's the basics of the robots API. There you go. Zoom in. So that's robots, right? You're simply receiving events, posting them back. In the new API, you can actually do stuff outside of events. If you wanted to do something on a cron job or like when something on an external system changed, you wanted to update a wave, you'll be able to basically authenticate your robot and then do stuff outside of the event, and you'll still have a context to do it with. Yeah. A robot can be on lots. So the question was, is a robot tied to one wave or can it be on lots of waves? And the answer is lots of waves, right? And actually, for one particular wave, when you say instance, like you're not actually guaranteed with App Engine that you're ever hitting the same instance of your app. So some people will make a mistake where they'll actually have a global variable in their App Engine app, and then it won't be the same after a few blips and misses. So you can actually have different instances of your App Engine app being hit on the same wave. But the robot can be on tons of different waves. So the LCA robot yesterday got put on 300 waves. And it was just looking at the content of the waves to decide what to do with them. Okay, any other questions on that? Cool, so now we have gadgets. So gadgets are a little bit different. They're basically, right now Wave is great for textual collaboration, but there's a lot of things that you want to do that involve visual collaboration. So gadgets are a way of putting visual collaboration into the Wave environment. And they're basically mini web pages that have a shared state across all the participants and that have a callback for when that changes so that they can all render the correct things for all the participants whenever it's changing. All right, so here's an example. Let me show you the actual Wave for this one. Let's see it a little more up close. So here we actually have two gadgets here, the IMDb gadget and this little one down here, the like and dislike gadget, which is actually pretty useful. So let me go bring up my editor debug again. So if I look at local XML, so what this is, we've got let me increase that a little bit. All right, so in the document, we have a gadget element, says my author, and it says the URL of the gadget. That's all it has right now. Now, watch to see what happens. Actually, I could have kept that open. I'll go minimize that. See if I can fit it both. Okay. So what I'm going to do is click like. As soon as I click like, you see that there's some child elements of the gadget here. So we got a state element. We got two state elements. So this is basically the gadget's shared hash map. Right, and all the participants have now had their document updated so that they all have this same state in the XML. So this one just says the like count, there are total of one people, and then my particular vote was that I like it. That's it. Pretty basic, but that's really the basis of how gadgets work. So what we have is that you click or you interact with a gadget. The gadget says, all right, I want to change the state, add this key, delete this key, modify the value of this key. That state change gets sent to the Wave server. The Wave server applies that to the document, does its, OT stuff, whatever, and then the gadget gets a state callback that says, all right, here's the new state, which probably, only includes their change, but could also, if you're doing like a very fast-paced game, could include changes from other people as well, right? And then it goes and renders the new state in the gadget. So some gadgets don't actually render their new state until they get the state callback, which is a little bit safer. And then other gadgets will kind of make that current state look tentative until they get it back from the server, because that's when you know it's really gone through. So there's like a drawing gadget, and when you first draw, it's gray. And when it comes back from the server with the state callback, it goes blue on black. And we took a look at this. That's the state changing. Now, obviously, we wrap this up in a JavaScript library that you can include in your gadget. And all you do is say submit delta with your new key value pair or your new dictionary of key values. And you have the state call, you register your state callback function. And when you get it back, you retrieve the keys that you care about and you render them however you want. So gadgets are actually, it's a fairly simple API, but depending on how you structure your state, you can do a lot with it, right? Some people make this mistake of squishing everything into one state key, which is bad because then multiple people can't edit that same state key at the same time. So you always want to make your state keys be as granular as possible. So you saw like the vote for mine was pamela.fox@wavesandbox.com/vote, and then the value of the vote, right? So that means that I can modify my vote and somebody else can modify their own vote at the exact same time. And it's just going to be different keys there. So it's really important to think about what your state looks like and decide, you know, how granular are the state edits going to be for people. And you can make pretty powerful stuff. So that's pretty much an introduction to the API. And hopefully it will give you a good grounding in your head as you see the other talks.
Any questions?
In the talk before, I mentioned about malicious robots. How do you guys deal with that?
Well, there's a lot of ways a robot can be malicious. Do you want to specify what kind of malicious robot?
A spam bot.
I wrote a spam bot.
So you deal with it by becoming one with them.
So the thing is that you can actually remove a robot from your Wave right now. We've actually enabled that for a while. You can just click remove on it. We haven't implemented it yet. We could implement a blacklist. What we're trying to do now is just teach people how to not write bad robots, right? Because if there's a robot on your Wave, it's because somebody added it, right? And if somebody added it, they should have, you know, probably done a background check on it. So, I mean, what we need to work on is, you know, possibly have some blacklisting, right? I think we'll want that. But also teaching people how to, because a lot of people are accidentally writing malicious robots. My very first robot was an incredibly malicious robot, and I didn't even know it. I was innocent.
and
so,
now?
You know, teach how to make better ones, do the blacklist, and also we're working on an extensions gallery that has ratings and reviews and stuff like that, and that's the kind of thing that would come out in an extensions gallery, like, don't put this robot on your way.
And then I suppose this is a future thing, but once you start letting remote robots onto the service, I suppose you've got the OAuth stuff to prevent that sort of thing happening?
Yeah, it's not. So you're asking about federated robots?
Yeah.
Okay. So as for federated robots, I don't think we're quite sure what the story is going to be there. I think we have to look into that more. That's quite a bit trickier. So right now we're dealing with the security of robots that are just on App Engine. And
yep.
As you said, where the new API has OAuth registration of robots that want to do stuff outside of the Wave context. So we can at least authenticate them a bit more.
Cool. Thank you.
And if you guys need a Wave Sandbox account, like if you're actually going to start developing, and I'll put this in the Wave too, but if you're going to start developing and you want to take advantage of that debug menu and the editor debug, really fun. Sandbox-form@appspot.com is a pretty quick way of getting a Wave Sandbox account. If you have any problems with it, just let me know. I'll be here.
Any other questions?
You mentioned with robots that they're essentially stateless. Is there any recommended way to do stateful stuff? I know a friend of mine has got a little Linode, which he's running a MySQL database that he's getting his robot to talk to maintain state. Is there any better or approved way for trying to maintain state in a robot?
Okay, so the question is about maintaining state in a robot without necessarily using the external database. So as I was saying, there's a couple ways of storing data using Wave. One of them is with the data documents that are on a particular wavelet. And a data document is just, once again, a hash map. We love those. And so basically, you can just put whatever data documents you want on the wavelet. So those are pretty neat, and you can use that for stuff. So for example, for the LCA robot, when I created a new session wave, I had the first time the robot ran, it actually created that new wave, and it stored a data document that said the URL for this session is blah. All right? And now when somebody went to that wave and started typing on it, the first time they started typing, the robot would see, okay, I'm going to fill in this wave. It would look at the data document for the URL. It would go and scrape the HTML from that URL. It would use that to fill in the wave, and then it would set another data document that said, this wave has been processed. And the next time it comes back, the next time somebody types in it, it's no longer going to process it again because it checks to see, like, all right, well, I've already set that this has been processed. Right, so that's a pretty easy way of just setting like really basic variable plus a boolean, and that goes a fair bit, and it's nice to be able to do that in the wave instead of having to set up your own little data store for that, and you know it reduces your app engine stuff. There's also the idea of actually creating an entirely new wavelet for storing data, and that would make sense maybe if you wanted just to store more general data, like stuff that wasn't necessarily scoped. Particular wave, you could create a new wavelet and either store it in the data documents there or even just store it in the text of that wavelet. And we're still kind of experimenting with if there's better ways of exposing doing data storage in waves to developers, and Shane has a fair amount of interest in that as well, I think. And one final way is actually using annotations. So if you want to store information about a particular range, you should use your own custom annotation. So you might say, so conference body, no, it doesn't do it, but it could. So for every session wave, it could say conference bot / session ID, and then the bot value would be like particular identifier for that. So then it could always go through and look at the actual structured data about the ranges in that document, right? So you've got range level, you've got wavelet level, and then you've got wave level data storage options.
Anyone else?
Cool.
Thanks, Pamela.